So, for this evening's entertainment, I'm going to talk about Buddhism and the environment. And why is this the case? Because most of you are very, very well aware of the state of the earth that we live on. And, you know, you can see the overall dynamics in human society with excessive greed and exploitation and mismanagement of natural resources and excessive pollution, to name a few, which are contributing to the deterioration and destruction of the planet eventually. So, you know, but naturally, you know, as one very high-class comedian said, that even with the atrocities that we are inflicting on planet Earth, that eventually when we destroy the environment and then, you know, human civilization eventually dies out and comes to an end, that, the Earth will you know, regenerate, maybe could take maybe 50,000, 100,000 years. And so, you know, when you see the activity of human beings, you know, the way we act upon the world, you know, upon the environment, you know, the nature that we live in, why do we conduct ourselves in a way, you know, when you look at general, say, you know, the general dynamics in society, why do we conduct ourselves in a way which is not conducive to the, the support and welfare of the natural environment. So, you know, unfortunately, human beings aren't, you know, naturally greedy, exploitive, the kind of characteristics which lead to this kind of problem that we see around us, you know, the melting of the ice caps, you know, disturbances in the weather pattern, floods, hurricanes, droughts in different parts of the world. You know, so you see this kind of imbalance of forces and energies with the global patterns around the planet. And so, you know, completely obvious to everyone with internet access that, you know, just the whole business with industrialization and burning of fossil fuels, excessive pollution, you know, multiple factors leading to destruction of the natural environment is going to have a very, very serious impact on human society. And the people who are largely responsible for this kind of just incredibly, really deluded and foolish mentality, even though these people may be incredibly intelligent, you know, they're probably some of the smartest people you will ever meet, but unfortunately they're also very, very deluded, greedy, selfish, egocentric. And, you know, it's those kind of human traits, you know, especially when you have that kind of mindset and you have excessive power and wealth and authority, that you have the ability to work the system, the financial economic system that we find ourselves in, to their own benefit, and to the disadvantage of the natural world that we see around us. And so, you know, any good religious person, whether they're Christian, Hindu, Muslim, or Buddhist, have at least, you know, enough sensitivity, awareness, enough understanding that, you know, the way the world is going, you know, it's not a very good path or direction that the natural dynamics that we see, you know, it's essentially just going to get worse and worse and worse until the weather system completely collapses, and then the poles eventually, it might take an incredibly long time, but the poles melt away and just flood the coastlines completely, drowning out major cities and whatnot. So, you know, all this kind of radical change we see in our natural world originating from the dynamics and behaviours of a small group of human beings who are essentially, you know, say, pulling strings and making things happen in, say, like high places, high circles, you know, with their mates, you know, with their, you know, the kind of sort of the class fraternity that they move and they say they move and act, you know, within the say the echelons, classes of power and wealth. And you know, so there's all, you know, there's all sorts of complicated dynamics behind this kind of mentality, but you know, essentially these people are not acting for the welfare of the majority, you know, of human beings, you know, spread right around the you know, the periphery of the planet. So, you know, once we, you know, pollute the air to a sufficient degree where it becomes unbreathable, then, you know, we're really in big trouble, because it's not something you can reverse, you know, that easily, you know, when you actually poison the air that we breathe. You know, when, you know, you got parts of China where, you know, they've got some of the worst air pollution in the world, and, you know, people get all sorts of major respiratory disorders and affecting one's glands, endocrine system. You know, people end up with different types of cancer, and you know, coming from very, very loose, say, regulatory laws and controls. But you know, it is quite possible for human beings to live in complete harmony with nature. You know, you don't have to be incredibly brilliant, or you know, be say like a, you know, like a high-ranking scientist to, you know, to realize that, you know, we can live in balance and in accordance with the natural laws that we see that regulate this planet. You know, this planet was born from, you know, this incredibly long time scale of evolutionary development, and, you know, I mean, the Earth is such a incredibly beautiful place. You know, there's so many, you know, absolutely stunning, beautiful things that we can see in this world, and it's due to the dynamics of a very, very small group of the population at the, say, the peak of the pyramid, which are instigating actions and modes of, say like development, you know, pulling strings, you know, making things happen, which are for the detriment of the human population. Which you can understand it to a degree, but it's completely amazing that, you know, these people are quite prepared to put the health and welfare of the majority of the human population at risk, because of their personal dynamics, you know, and they, you know, networking with their powerful and wealthy friends to make things happen for their, you know, for their own benefit, for the, you know, the disadvantage of the rest of the human race. And, you know, it doesn't really make sense, you know, when you look at it, that, you know, these people at the top, you know, want the biggest slice of the pie, and, you know, their slice, you know, it's a very, very big slice, and it's you know, it's far more money and power that they could ever use in their lifetime, that their families could ever use. You know, people like the Rothschilds, for example, you know, there's supposedly maybe 9 major families who control an incredible amount of money and authority around the globes, you know, within multinational corporations, within the banking fraternity and whatnot, to, you know, to name a few. There's, you know, there's a, like a strata of levels that these people are getting their greedy little fingers into and leading, you know, they're developing this path of say imbalance, destruction, and misfortune, which is, you know, affecting the rest of the human race, you know, who have to live on this planet with these maniacs. You know, these incredibly intelligent but very, very deluded maniacs who may possibly have their own agenda if you're into sort of conspiracy type theory. So, you know, there is the possibility, you know, say like a classic example for human beings to live in, I wouldn't say perfect balance and harmony in nature, but I mean very, very close to it. People like say social scientists and inventors and humanists like Jack Fresco from the Venus Project, who had absolutely brilliant ideas and concepts and plans and drawings, and this very, very, you know, forward-thinking, a man who was very ahead of his time, and the guy just wasn't talking off the top of his head. You know, you could, you know, anyone with half a brain could actually see very, very clearly that, you know, the things that he explored, the things that he studied and spoke of and engineered, you know, the drawings, the plans, the design of a human society, a futuristic human society where high-class technology, high-class, say, engineering, computers, were used to their full power and extent for the protection and benefit of the natural environment and the protection and benefit of the human race in its totality across the globe. So, you know, many of you may have come across that material, but it's absolutely brilliant. You know, this the ideas that this particular gentleman had, this Jack Fresco, I mean, this guy was just way ahead of his time, dedicated a lot, you know, the majority of his life, even from a young age, you know, he was already starting to think, you know, along these avenues. 12, 13 years of age, he was already coming up with, you know, these very, very progressive, very, very fresh, inventive type of ideas, concepts, and he spent the vast majority of his life moving in this direction with the Venus Project, and you know the things that he spoke of in relation to, you know, developing a very, very progressive, humanistic, very supporting and caring human society, and a full protection of nature, you know, of our natural world being in harmony, you know, actually being, you know, in a, like a supportive system with, you know, with, you know, with the forests, with the waterways, rivers, you know, dams, if and whatnot. You know, people, you know, naturally human beings need to dam water, at least to a small degree, for you know, for storage, for the irrigation water networks that we currently see. You know, there's certain systems which are quite necessary, but you know, when you see the full planning and design of the concepts and ideas that you had, you know, you could see from from top to bottom that you know, it was workable, and it had a reality base. You know, the guy just wasn't talking off the top of his head. A compassionate person, very, like a humanist on the heart level, but, you know, just brilliant, intellectually just brilliant, you know, a very, very, you know, very good personal qualities, and, you know, and you could see that what he was talking about, you would be able to, I can't think of the right words, you could bring these things into action, you could instigate these ideas, projects, concepts, and you know, it was completely obvious to me that virtually 99.9% of what he was talking about, you know, would actually work and could be put, you know, into action. And you know, we've got the technology, we've got the computing power, and the knowledge and the information to protect the environment, to raise the standard of living of human beings, and you know, the kind of core concepts where the earth is the say the complete say vessel, or you know, it's something that the whole of the human race owns the planet in its entirety. It's not like, you know, we're divided with, you know, between say countries and nations. That, you know, the human race has its, you know, has the planet as its basis of ownership. So, you know, instead of saying things like, you know, the Egyptians own Egypt, you know, the Americans own own the US, you know, South Africa owns that particular part of the African nations. You know, so we, you know, creating divisions, borders, separation between ourself, between other races and cultures, you know, brings about a potential for division, competition, unequal distribution of wealth and resources, and you know, this you know, a sort of a resource-based economy has a much more humanistic, altruistic, and you know, less greedy, selfish, you know, egocentric kind of perspective. You know, instead of having this, like, I won't get into say politics, you know, too much, but you know, when you have say like a money-based economy, you know, that's just a breeding ground for greed, exploitation, criminal activity. You know, the kind of dynamics that we see around the globe, you know, the an unequal, you know, distribution of resources, wealth, opportunities, you know, all the inequality that we see between human beings around the planet. I mean, a lot of that arises from the economic models that we, you know, that we see. You know, when you have, say, like, you know, financial or money-based economies that we see around the world, they are a breeding ground for this kind of ugly, materialistic selfishness that we see between these so-called the fat cats at the top and, you know, say the middle classes and the working class fraternity who make up the largest percentage of the population. So the reason why I basically fixated on this particular point, because this particular gentleman, Jack Fresco, you know, because of his humanistic perspective, and you know, I studied just at least a small amount of his material, and you know, this guy, his perspective on life, you know, his mindset is very, very much in accordance with Buddhism and Dharma. You know, I mean, you know, Buddha Dharma, it moves in that direction of harmony, balance, a sense of equality, fairness, compassion, a sense of sharing, you know, between, you know, human beings who share this planet together. You know, there's enough resources on this planet to go round, to be shared equally among groups and of human beings, even cultures of human beings. There's enough food, there's enough water, what do we see? We see inequality, we see separation, we see division, and we see especially unequal parameters in wealth and power. You see these misfits. These very, very smart and cunning, but very, very, almost very, very sick and deluded group of people at the top of the stratum in human society who are incredibly manipulative, cunning, incredibly selfish. And these are the people, these are like the puppet masters who are pulling the strings and bring about a lot of inequality and misfortune for the majority of human beings on this planet. And so, you know, my kind of perspective is, you know, I wouldn't say puzzles me. You know, you can understand the dynamics with these kind of like sociopaths, because that's really what they are. You know, that if you know people who have that kind of mentality, who will put other human beings, you know, at a major disadvantage, you know, on many fronts. Who will put them at a disadvantage financially, their quality of life, their quality of health. You know, the planet is bountiful. If human beings overall, as one huge human family, approached our relationship with the planet from a humanistic, from a humanistic perspective, you know, we could live in this world, we could live on this earth, you know, almost like it was a paradise. You know, the potential is there. But as soon as you have, you know, just unequal distribution of wealth, power, and resources, and all those other social dynamics, you know, divisions between culture, nations, you know, political division, excessive military, what would you call it? Like armies, you know. Groups of I can't think of even the right words, you know, military personnel, soldiers and whatnot in different parts of the world. You know, I mean, why do we need so many armies in the world? You know, you ask the average man in the street with a couple of children, you know, if you could abolish all, say, military installations, military systems, missile sites, you know, all these satellites which are responsible for security and defense. You know, the amount of resources and money which goes into maintaining these military systems to essentially protect ourselves from someone maybe on the other side of the world. Why do you need to protect yourself from these guys? What are you scared of? You know, they're human beings. They may have a sense of fear as well, but you know, when you get that separation in space, in distance, differences in culture. So, you know, there's a potential there for differences on many levels to breed suspicion, fear, concern, maybe even slight paranoia that if these guys have more missile bases or have a greater sense of military technology, we may be at a disadvantage, our power base and whatnot. So you get these really, fearful, deluded mentality, you know, mismanagement of incredible levels of money, resources, to protect ourselves from this so-called threat. But people can argue the point where we have Mr. what's his name, Jong Il-sung, whatever his name is, in North Korea, you know, spouting off about destroying the United States. I mean this guy might be mad enough to to try something like that. But you know, but what brought him to that point in the first place? You know, he may feel, you know, this guy may be genuinely paranoid. Even Stalin was considered a sociopath with paranoid ideation. So, you know, you just imagine that you're a small, you know, say hermit's kingdom, you know, very, very insular. You know, economically you're not doing very well. You feel that you're surrounded by hostile countries. And, you know, that could breed that kind of mentality, you know. I won't go into the politics too much. It's a bit of a distraction. But, you know, that you see that thing, that, you know, that sense of separation and division, you know, that sense of threat and worry and maybe paranoia. So, you know, the leader of North Korea, you know, jumping up and down, you know, flexing his muscles, showing off his latest missiles and doing his tests and whatnot. Maybe a serious point of concern with other nations in the world. So, you know, it doesn't need, you know, I'm not talking from a, what would you call it, say like an airy-fairy mentality. I don't have this kind of sort of dreamy mentality, but, you know, that kind of approach, that kind of mindset, I can only see like disadvantages. I really can't see any little benefit whatsoever with that kind of mindset. You know, when you look at the human mind and you see the product of that, you see the outcome of that, those kind of mental dynamics, and they're not good at all on many levels. And so, you know, why do, you know, some of these people are incredibly smart, very, very well educated, but emotionally, they can be incredibly, basically, ignorant and stupid and foolish. And, you ask the average person, the average teenager in this, walking the street, you know, like a mum or dad with several children, you know, they wouldn't go along with this type of stupidity, this kind of madness. I mean, you know, what it just doesn't make any sense. The average person living in, you know, in the local community, you know, probably at least 80-90% of would say straight off the cuff that, you know, even with no professional education whatsoever at the university level, any specialized education, the vast majority of the human population would not agree with this kind of mentality, this kind of mindset in relation with other human beings and in relation with the natural environment. And you only need half a brain to look at the dynamics, look at the cause and effect principle, and look at the outcome with that kind of approach that we see on many levels in modern human society, and it really doesn't cut the ice. The results are not very good whatsoever across the board. And unfortunately, the people who have the brightest, most progressive, humanistic, and compassionate ideas, unfortunately, they are they have the lowest levels of power and influence on a broad scale in human society. You know, you may have key people, and you could have certain politicians or even high-ranking political officials and whatnot, you know, international peace protesters who have incredibly beneficial mentalities and attitudes to life in general, on a big scale, you know, like we're talking about global principles. And but unfortunately, they don't have the power and the influence to basically pull strings and make things happen. But as one of our monks came up with a very interesting point, he said, when the vast majority of good people stand by and do nothing, then that allows the powerful and wealthy elite to basically be the puppet masters on a global scale, and to exercise a degree of power and control over the human population and the dynamics that we see in human society. And but you know, so you know, when we look at nature in itself, you know, you look at the natural forces and energies that you see around the planet, and you know, nature is such a beautiful, absolutely stunning, process. The way, you know, the way elements, you know, the way they move, and the way the way they're shaped, and the way they grow and develop, you know, all the different levels of nature that we see, you know, it's such an incredibly, you know, just really incredibly beautiful thing, you know, to go into the forest and to look at, you know, the flowers and the insects and just, you know, just even on this, on these very, very earthy kind of principles, you know, just watching the way, say, like even the way, say, ants carry food back to their nests, and the way, you know, the way the birds, you know, say, move in the treetops, and the way, you know, say, like bees take pollen from a flower, you know, I mean, you know, so, you know, just, when you just watch it very, very closely, and you look at, you know, just look at the way nature works, the way natural laws work, you know, even on this very, say, very small but very personal scale, you know, it's a just absolutely fascinating thing to observe and you know, right out, if you take it out to its full extent. Now, when you say, for example, you get, say, like spiral galaxies, when spiral galaxies come together, and then they their orbits become enmeshed, and then they start to, say, you know, like to tear each other apart, and then you get like a conglomeration of the forces and the energies and the elements which make up those stars and moons and it could be universes, you know, God knows how many, galaxies, sorry, all, you know, the numberless, I mean, galaxies which exist in that spiral, you know, network, and the way they move, and the, you know, just the cosmic forces that you see at work, you know, sort of like, you know, this kind of, you know, the circular kind of dynamics that we see in nature from on a grand to a very, very minute scale. It's like this principle of circles within circles within circles, going from a very, very, say, like tiny scale right out to the very far reaches of the observable universe that we see. You know, so I mean, so you know, so what can we do? You know, we the vast majority of the human population would be far more interested. Would certainly, you know, the vast majority of the population would agree that, you know, the human beings can potentially live, you know, can adopt practices and attitudes and dynamics which are far more beneficial and fruitful than the kind of dynamics that we see currently. And so, you know, it's a real sort of catch 22. So I'm, you know, for me, I'm really interested in nature. I really love the natural world, but there's, you know, unfortunately, there's a small, very small group of the population who are not very interested in that whatsoever. So you've got these very, very shallow, very, very shallow materialistic individuals who are, you know, just doing this, you know, just pulling strings and doing all this kind of wholesome stuff on many levels, which filters down and affects the rest of the human society. So, you know, the only way we're going to see a change in the overall dynamics with across the world that we live in is just a full almost like an evolution, a progression of human society that we find ourselves in. And the Venus Project was, you know, it's just outstanding. You know, like I don't get internet access very often at all, you know. But there's certain things which I really, you know, make it a point to study when I can. And that material that you see, it's just absolutely brilliant. You know, it's the kind of ideas and progressive development and utilization of, you know, of human potential, which would really, really work. And those kind of dynamics, they're moving towards this sense of balance and equality and being in harmony with nature. You know, you can have an incredibly progressive, modern, you know, it's almost like a utopia, this very, very, you know, say beautiful, progressive human society across the globe, you know, moving, you know, with those kind of dynamic principles. You know, these things are very, you know, these things are realistically quite possible. It's not like, you know, these people have, you know, they're just like, what would you call them? You know, like, you know, they're very like dreamers. You know, these kind of people who have this kind of like utopian mentality. You know, they're not really reality based, but you know, you could see that kind of approach would work. I mean, across the board, but it's just essentially it's being, you know, the human society, you know, our human world is basically human society, which is affecting the dynamics of the planet, and you know, if we keep going in this manner, we will slowly destroy ourselves. And as one of the disciples who's connected with the monastery was saying that both in China and America, that possibly other parts of the world, realistically, are experiencing food shortages. There's problems with food production because the problems that we are creating with the climatic dynamics with the planet, just small but very essential principles. You know, like insects and bees, and his words were, are just dropping out of the sky, you know, because of problems with disturbances in weather pattern, wind conditions, rainfall, you know, maybe pollution to a degree, that, you know, bees and insects are basically dying, and the potential for the fertilization of grains and certain crops are being placed in jeopardy. So you're not getting proper fertilization and germination of specific crop sources. Could be, you know, I mean, he didn't go into full detail, but I might have an opportunity later to check it out. But, you know, just essential principles like that, you know, you can plant as many, say, you know, grasses, grains. It could be anything. It could be herbal plants. It could be legumes, bulbs, tubers. You know, you can plant as much as you like, but if you don't have the insects to cross-pollinate those food resources that are being developed, the food production is going to drop off big time. And you know, then you're going to, you know, there's going to be shortages, and there's going to be possibly even, who knows, maybe 10, 20 years, you know, we could have a, you know, I mean, there's enough starvation around the planet. You know, when they dump, you know, hundreds of tons of grain food into the ocean in order to control and regulate the market price of wheat and possibly oats and different things, which I'm not fully informed on, just to control market price when you've got, you know, you've got adults and children and babies, you know, starving in African nations, possibly starving in the Middle East because of, you've got largely desert conditions, and it's just tragic. It just really disgusts me. And you know, just the inequality, the imbalance, the unfairness that we see around the world. You know, just the average person in the street has got the common sense, has got the emotional intelligence to see what's going on. The vast majority of people in society have internet access. They can see very, very clearly what's going on, and the average person are the largest percentage of the population. And if the largest percentage of the population just turned around and took control of the dynamics within human society at the grassroots level, you know, things like even political control, military control, you know, protecting agriculture, protecting balances of power, inequality, you know, if the vast majority of the population, which is what we are, took control of the system and the development of the system for the betterment of the human race, it would be an incredible thing. You know, we are the majority of the population, but unfortunately we are moving and functioning in an economy based system, based, you know, the monetary based economy system, which breeds inequality, poverty, disadvantage, and many other unwholesome principles that we see. And you know, it's completely obvious to you people who, you know, you're working for a living, you have mortgages, you have bills, and you know, it's you know, life is getting very, very tough these days, and it's very, very sad that the majority of the population are actually placed at a disadvantage on many levels because of the stupidity and the ugliness, the selfishness of a very, very small group of the population. And hopefully no one will basically come after me and maybe take my life. A potential might be there. But you know, I feel quite strongly about this. And you know, I know lots and lots of people who have a similar mentality to my own. But the thing is, you know, we are the majority of the population, and like the most decent religious people, you know, have, you know, like a similar perspective. They may not necessarily be as puritanical as the monks and nuns in the way that they see an ideal say, human society. You know, the monks and nuns who tend to be quite sensitive, intuitive people, you know, especially because that's the way the meditation affects you. It goes right through you, it goes right through your personality, and it brings about changes, both, you know, in your mind and your, you know, say, like, emotional intelligence. But it's just very, you know, so you really feel that principle that, you know, we are the majority, but we are the majority who have been placed at a disadvantage in the system that we find ourselves. So, you know, so all these principles that we see, you know, all these, say, like, you know, like, unpleasant principles that we see, you know, in the inequality, the disadvantages, the lack of opportunity, you know, across the globe, will continue to manifest with this system that we have, and it's not going to change while the current, say, what would you call it? Say, you know, political, economic, military model that we see continues. You know, human society is going to follow in this particular direction, and it's going to get a lot worse. And it just amazes me, just the level of corruption and stupidity of. You know, my words are very, you know, are quite strong, but I won't hold back on this. You know, of politicians, they're supposed to be, you know, intelligent, you know, some of the most intelligent, capable people, but you know, these people are like puppets. You know, they're controlled by the banking fraternity, they're controlled by the pharmaceutical companies, they're controlled by the multinationals. And, you know, like I said to my father, like, I don't get into this stuff very often, but my father's incredibly well-studied, well-read. You know, he's studied and researched and read, you know, thousands and thousands of books over the last, say, 55 years, or say 60 years. He's been, you know, he's a person who researches, he likes to educate himself, he likes to understand what's going on in the world, and I said, even, you know, say, for example, our current prime minister, who's supposedly a very intelligent, very capable businessman, had a very good track record, worked for a number of big corporations, worked for Kerry Packer, you know, proved himself to be a resourceful, competent, an intelligent business person. And I said to my father, why hasn't he been able to run the country in a more, say, fruitful, intelligent manner? And the words my father came out with was, he's got so many IOUs on him. So, you know, all of you can double check this on Google. I might check it later. That, you know, he's with the his ability to basically come into power. You know, he had to align himself with other political parties. You know, you people know a lot more about this than I do currently. But, and he has so many IOUs on him that he essentially can't lead his own political party. He can't lead the country in a manner which is of any great fruit and benefit for the nation as a whole. And it's just this whole corruption thing again, you know, from the top to the bottom, you know, just filtering through like a cancer, you know, going right down to grassroots levels. And it's not going to change. It's this kind of imbalance that we see, both within human society, and between human society and the natural world which is supporting us. So as soon as we destroy the world that we live in, then eventually human society and civilization is going to come to an end. You know, when you reach that point of non-return, which is potentially going to happen in the next, say, maybe 100 years if things don't change radically as we see them. So I'll bring this talk to a close, and I'll open the floor for some radical views and opinions. Yes, this lady on my right, the microphone's coming up.
Thank you for your lovely meditation. I found your talk very, very difficult. Really, it starts with us, with each individual. It's no good thinking about changing the whole world. It's changing our own selves. And there's many, many individuals and communities that are doing that. They're going into sustainable living. They are growing their own vegetables, and they are creating a healthy lifestyle. And it's up to us to, you know, when we go out and we see rubbish, to pick it up, to set the example for others. It's up to us to send positive energy out to the planet. I'm a Reiki master, and every night I send Reiki healing out to the planet and to where it's needed. And we have that capacity to send love and gratitude to the planet. And I mean, Australia, we have a really good social welfare system, even though there's few problems. But compared to the rest of the world, we are very fortunate. And we really need to see what we can be grateful for in our own lives. We all, look how wonderful we have a really, really wonderful lifestyle here. And we need to be grateful for that and not think about the rest of how terrible the world is and how terrible the future is. We need to take responsibility in the moment for our own lives, for ourselves. And as Buddhists, particularly that. As a Buddhist, you know, we don't want to harm any animals or that, but we need to really show an example for all our neighbours, for all the people around us, that we respect and value all of human life and the planet as a whole. And it starts in our own lives in a very little, simple way with me. I start with me. Not that I'm going to change the political system, that I'm going to change all this conspiracy theory. That just puts us into fear. It's okay, it's out there, but harping on that puts us into fear. We really need to... The emphasis should be on how can we do something as individuals. And that's where I come from. Thank you.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And in order to bring about that sense of change, it has to come from the individual. There's no doubt about it. So I think there's no other... A gentleman on the
just here?
Far back, on the back there, on the left.
Can you hear me? No? Yep.
And, okay.
Can you hear me? Yep. I actually thought it was quite an interesting topic, to be honest. I'm interested to know what the Buddhist approach is to people, as you mentioned. Do you rely on karma to sort them out in the next life, or is it more, or if that is the case, it's probably too late because by that stage the damage has been done. So how are you taught to approach or to think about this?
So you know, if you look on it, like say the big picture, karma's just the, you know, that cause and effect principle, what goes around comes around. So whatever energy that these people, I mean, on any level, are projecting into the world returns to us. So, you know, so from, you know, from the grassroots level, so from people in the general community to, say, the wealthy and powerful, whatever energy you project out into the world is going to return to you. And, you know, it's exactly right. I should have spoke about it more succinctly, but that personal, you know, because we put a lot of emphasis on personal responsibility, especially in Buddhism, and in order to, you know, just to bring about a change in human consciousness, it has to come from the individual, because otherwise it really won't happen at all. You know, as human beings with consciousness, we make choices and decisions, and, you know, we can certainly you know, do so many say beneficial things for, you know, for each other, for the environment, for the planet. But unfortunately, I mean, you know, those for the people who make say very, very bad decisions which affect the rest of the population, that they, you know, eventually they, it's going to come full circle, and they, you know, essentially they're going to suffer as a result. But, you know what kind of time scale that may occur, it's you know, you've really got, it's hard to, you can't really say exactly, you know, when it would take place. You've got to have like incredible psychic ability to know when a person's going to get, you know, these people like this are going to sort of get their due. But yeah, but, you know, but I definitely agree, you know, 100% that in order to bring about that real sense of change and say goodness, you know, each one of us can make a difference in our own way. There's all sorts of things you can do with, what would you call it? You know, like things like growing one's own vegetables and solar power and wind turbines. There's all sorts of things that we can do to minimize, you know, say harm to the environment, improve the quality of our life. And but, you know, each person will have a certain degree of say resources available to them, and if you get a very, very large number of the population who move in that direction, it's going to have the effect will become greater and greater over time. No other takers? Is anyone else?
Hi, Ajahn. Just a quick question. These people that you were talking about, they're at the top of the stratum, do you think they evolved naturally to those positions as a result of the causes and conditions? Like, for example, it's not necessarily the people, but it was just a role that had to be fulfilled because of the attitudes and because of the economic system, because of the way just the humans have evolved and the path, and this is part of the path that the human race is taking.
So yeah, so if you look at the whole structure, I won't divert too much, but when you look at the structure of say the society that we find ourselves in, and you know the way the structure is designed is to largely benefit the people at the say the top of the pyramid, and you know, because it, you know, it's just obvious stuff that there's the planet can support the whole of the human population if it's managed correctly, but it's just that same principle of a certain group of people want the biggest slice of the pie. I mean, for what, you know, the more money and power that you could ever need. And, you know, including their families their colleagues. You know, how many billions do you need? How many multinational companies do you need? So the system, it puts the vast majority of the population at a disadvantage. But realistically, the only way to change the system is from that personal perspective, which is a very, very good point. A very, very it's like essential. I mean, I can talk about broad terms, you know, say like the big picture, but when it comes to real change, it's got to come from within the human being, from within one's mind. And because our world is a product of the mind of human beings. We project our thoughts and feelings and our ideas and desires out into the world, and we shape the world that we live in. So it all, you know, as the Buddha said, that the mind is the forerunner of all states. So the world that we find ourselves in is an expression of the minds of human beings. Yeah, this Sally at the back.
I'd like to share something that I think helps, and that is that in your everyday actions, if you keep in your awareness the choices that you make as you're going about your daily life, and you put living things first, okay, and living needs first, just in small ways, that actually does make a difference. And it makes a difference to the person who does it too. So, for example, it's not just about not harming living creatures. It might be about a choice as to, for example, whether you put the washing on or when you're starving hungry, instead of going and getting yourself something to eat, because you're actually respecting the living system that you actually are, over and above the work which your mind thinks it needs to do. And I think that actually multiplies and benefits all life, simply by the fact that you, in your choice of action, are respecting the life both within you and you know, if you extend that to other things as well, like simple everyday choices that you make, without it being absolutely enormous, it actually has a knock-on effect. I can't think of another immediate example, but I just wanted to share it as something that's actually worked for me, and I feel that, you know, it doesn't shake nations, but certainly there's a knock-on effect which supports life, and that's really what you're saying the Earth needs.
Yeah, but, I did sort of come from a big picture perspective, but everyone's well aware. Even over the course of our life, that you could make like 1,000 changes in one's life to improve the quality of the life of one's own life, one's family, and the community that we live in. So it's a matter of like knowledge and education. And so, it's definitely, all these small changes that we make for, say, the betterment of ourselves and the general community, and it's just the goodness and the power of that increases, over time. And then, and realistically, if enough people, have progressive ideas, have a kind of like humanistic in their perspective, they care about the environment, you know, eventually you, well, maybe eventually, will be able to bring about a substantial change that you know that is quite tangible. You can see across human society, but it's the only way, really. Just my opinion. It's the only way. It has to come from inside the human being. But it's a bit. I mean, especially with the internet, you can get very and really, really educate yourself, and you can find absolutely brilliant ways to improve the quality of one's life and the people around one. And unfortunately, I don't get on the internet very much, which puts me at a disadvantage. But I completely agree. When we bring about a sense of change within oneself and move towards that, sort of altruistic, humanistic, aspects of conservation, protecting the environment. That slowly that energy like radiates out from oneself to one's family, to the general community, and hopefully the rest of the world eventually. But it'll probably take a large degree of the population to change the system overall. But the only way it's going to work is to say from the inside out. So, no other opinions, ideas, whatsoever? Okay, we'll call it an evening. Thank you very much. Actually, we've got... Okay, from Lionel, USA, can large-scale natural occurrences that affect many beings, such as global warming, be reconciled with the law of karma? Well, we'll say karma is action, so all of us from second to second create, karmic action, through our thoughts, speech, the bodily behaviour. And, you can say that, for something, for example, you can be running a company, you can contribute to global warming, and there's going to be, like a cause and effect principle, which is going to return to you. So if you've got a factory and you're polluting the environment and you're affecting other human beings, the potential of that, the karmic potential, is going to return to you. So it'll be like measure for measure, or even much more than that, because you're affecting multiple human beings. So from Tim in the USA, by calling people maniac, does that indicate quarrel? Is there a better way of using Buddha's principles? I hold my point. I won't back down on that one. That's the perspective I have on these individuals. But it's a matter of which way that you approach. How can you bring about, the change in human society? But that same principle, the humanistic principles, you can certainly apply them. You don't have to run around with guns and shoot these people, but you just work on the grassroots level and bring about those small changes within oneself, moving out into the community and then across communities, regions, and nations. So from Eric, San Francisco, as Buddhists, what kind of other tangible and skillful ways can we use to do something about these environmental issues and resist those in power? But I think, just that same principle, the bottom line, it's got to come from within the human being. And as we make changes, which are close to home, just our personal behaviour, our human behaviour, and the general and the general community that will move out. But eventually, you know, when say, because it would probably take, you know, quite a significant degree of, say, social and humanistic action to counteract those people in power. You know, I don't. It's definitely won't be, say, an easy thing to do in the short term. But you start with small things, and then you increase the. How can I explain it? The frequency, the action, the potential of that, and eventually that that kind of attitude will slowly seep through the rest of human culture. But those people, the wealthy and the powerful, they will still resist. You know, they will still resist the good intentions of the human population, the vast majority of the human population. So, you know, I won't retract. I won't back down on what I said. I have that kind of perspective. But it's a matter of, you know, you just put everything out there, and then people, you know, you just process and assimilate the information and make an overall assessment, and then you decide which is the best way to approach this situation that we find ourselves in across the globe. So does that cover everyone? Isn't that enough for one evening? Okay, we'll call it a day. Thank you for your kind attention and your patience.